You're listening to Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Cynthia Canty. The United Methodist Church is the second largest Christian denomination in this country, and it faces a likely wave of defections after delegates at a crucial conference Tuesday voted to strengthen bans on same-sex marriage in gay and lesbian clergy. Emotions ran high, with some supporters of more LGBT inclusion in tears. Here with us is someone who was at that vote, the Reverend Joy Moore of Bethel United Methodist Church in Flint. Reverend Moore, what are your thoughts on yesterday's vote?
It was a difficult few days for the United Methodist Church. I don't think anyone won with that vote. What we attempted to do was continue the position that the denomination has always held. I think we hadn't recognized yet that the church had not moved as quickly as the culture. And by attempting to do that in an off-season focused vote, I think we did more harm in the conversations we had with one another, and seeing again, the majority still believes that our discipline is the church that they joined and the church that they want to remain a part of.
What are you hearing, Pastor Moore, from your own congregation about this debate? Is it on their radar?
It is less on our radar as an African-American congregation in Flint. The immediate needs of our community are more our focus. Our church is a help center, one of three help centers in the city. We distribute water, provide food for the homeless, provide various educational opportunities for people to understand where they can get help and where they can find opportunities for schooling or legal help, advice, and things of that nature. So for our congregation, which has a long history as the United Methodist Church, we were the first African-American congregation placed in that area. And after the other congregations, African-American congregations came to our area, they looked to the members of this congregation, which have been here for almost 100 years. And so their concern is the immediate needs of the community through this water crisis, providing water and filters and food. And so they're very clear about who they are and living out their identity as ambassadors for Christ. And so they're living that and are waiting to see, or we're waiting to see, what the denomination would do in terms of whether it would remain faithful to its doctrinal standards.
When you look at figures, the data tells us the United Methodist Church in this country has seen membership decline over the past 25 years. The median age is 57, so it's struggling to attract younger people, and these younger people are more likely to lean left on LGBT issues. Do you feel this vote will affect your church's ability to attract young Christians?
That is true. And one of the things that I think we fail to recognize is that a lot of young people are also choosing to join churches that give them an opportunity to be held accountable for a lifestyle. I used to teach out in Southern California, and I had students say that the reason that they chose to go to a school that was traditional in its view was because they wanted to be held accountable to the values that they learned in the church. They were very clear about their identity. They were attracted to people of the same, their same gender. But they also believed that they wanted to live the life that they had been raised to live. And the gay community did not encourage them to be held in that kind of accountability. So they wanted a church to be the community that accepted who they are, but also held them accountable to the values of celibacy and singleness and fidelity in a heterosexual marriage. I found that probably one of the most convicting conversations that I had, to have young people in their early 20s say that what they wanted was to be a part of a church that held them accountable to what they understood the Bible to say God's call on their life was.
Well, we hear now that there are members of the clergy and there's Methodist congregations now deciding whether to split off from the church, and that a wave of departures can be expected. Can these two halves of the church coexist?
And that's the pain that I think that this weekend demonstrated, is that we attacked one another. We spoke out of our passion and not out of our love for one another. And so things were said, and some decisions were made in the heat of moments that make it hard for people to trust that we can live by the rules that the denomination has maintained for the last 40 years. And when you are a person that says, I surrender to these rules, it's hard to know what rules will be broken when you are with someone else who is saying, I'm going to be a part of this, but I'm not going to live by the rules that it demands. If you would allow me, let me try to say it this way. The church had been a place where in a culture that practiced many things that are normal for human beings to do, the church had been a safe place for a community of people to gather to say, we want to live by a higher standard, pointing beyond ourselves to the revelation of God's good in the world. We have found ourselves navel-gazing so that we are talking about what our self-satisfactions are and not what our what we would limit ourselves to. So that student that I was referencing, if the rules had changed in the denomination, could no longer trust that there is a church that will allow him to be held accountable to the Christian standards that his grandparents taught him that he wanted to accept. The question is whether or not people are willing to say, I accept the decision of the majority of this church that has been consistent for the last 40 years. The reason that both sides want to leave is because we can't seem to move across this almost 50% divide, and the people that are still in the majority cannot trust that they will not constantly be coerced to reconsider their positions. And that's what makes it hard to live together.
And in the final moments we have, do you believe, is this an existential threat to the United Methodist Church in our country?
As a denomination, I know it is a threat to our witness to the world, because on neither side are we saying to the world what we want to say. And that is, I think, what your question is. Can people of opposing views live together? And I believe that people with opposing views, with contradictory views, cannot live together, because you are not finding a paradox. You're not finding an irony. You're trying to constantly say one person is fundamentally wrong. And that is what has captivated us, if not for the last 40 years, definitely for the last 2 years. And as an African-American pastor in Flint, Michigan, there are so many other necessary needs of people's lives that are not focused on who they are sleeping with. And I would like to see our denomination focus on other needs than that.
The Reverend Joy Moore, pastor of Bethel United Methodist Church in Flint, thank you for being with us on Stateside.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate, again, your taking this conversation.
And now we turn to someone with a different view about Tuesday's vote that strengthens the United Methodist Church ban on gay and lesbian clergy and same-sex marriage. Reverend Tim Ziegler is pastor of Westside United Methodist Church in Ann Arbor. Welcome, and tell us how you feel about Tuesday's vote.
Well, thank you very much. I'm sorry that it's under these circumstances. I and many of my colleagues throughout the United States, the state of Michigan, the city of Ann Arbor, and throughout the globe are really heartbroken today due to the events at the General Conference in St. Louis.
Why?
I just can't imagine the amount of pain and hurt that is being inflicted upon a group of folks that are already marginalized. And so I can sit here in this interview, and thank you for this time, but I can't imagine what it's like to be on the margins like that, to be a part of that LGBTQIA community that is just so incredibly devastated at, once again, actions that are used to marginalize and not include.
I know the motto of the United Methodist Church is open hearts, open minds, open doors. Does that motto feel the same to you today?
No. I mean, we have a lot of work to do. But that is where the hope is. I mean, General Conference, thankfully, does not speak for God. General Conference is not going to release us as a local United Methodist Church from our responsibilities to proclaim the gospel openly to all people, no asterisks, to be as inclusive as we possibly can in all of our activities.
When you think of this vote, does it change anything about the choices that you're going to be making as a pastor to your congregation, particularly whether or not you would consider marrying a same-sex couple?
Those questions are always before us. And as a person of faith, I think one of the most important questions that I continually ask myself and challenge those in my congregation with, and now the congregation as a whole, is what is the next right thing for us to do? What are the next right steps for us to do? How can we be a fully inclusive church as a part of a global organization that is clearly not there with us? When the question comes to me personally being able to officiate same-sex marriage, I long for that day. I have since the beginning that I can remember. I mean, gay folks have always been a part of my life and deep friends, and I just long for that day. But so long as I do hold my membership within the annual conference, I feel like I'm being excluded from participating in those activities.
What would be the consequences based on yesterday's vote if someone were to say, I will marry you to a same-sex couple?
It's really harsh. I believe the first year you're suspended without pay, and then the second offense, you're defrocked. You lose your credentials within the United Methodist Church.
And that, so when we talk about seeing tears and seeing emotions, that's kind of where some of this is at.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what this is all about. I was really hopeful that the One Church plan could pass. Mm-hmm. I was hopeful that we were a denomination, which historically we have been, which is a big tent denomination. There's room for minority opinions. There's room for majority opinions. But for all of us in our diversity to still be united as Methodists, but that does not feel the same today.
7 million of you in this country. That, as you say, there's a lot of viewpoints in that tent. Yeah, I've got to wonder, when the ban on gay marriage was overturned in this country in 2013, did you feel that that would kind of get things in motion and set up a scenario where your church would change as well, since that was where the country was headed?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that was such a welcome event within our country. And for equality and justice for all persons. And Westside Church is right there helping to fulfill that mission. And it is just so disconcerting that the United Methodist Church here globally has taken a step back. There is a word of hope, and that is that among the U.S. delegates to the General Conference, 66% of them were for full inclusion.
Yes, I saw that actually reported in the New York Times. So what about these folks? What about folks in your congregation, clearly you as their pastor, who are very saddened by what happened? What's ahead? I mean, can the two halves of these church coexist? What options are you weighing? Because we're hearing talk of waves of defections from the church.
Yeah. Today is really a day of mourning and grieving, both parts that are important to any faith journey. As we continue to ask the question as to what is next for us, I wish I had that answer, but I do think that everything is on the table for local congregations and for whole swaths of the country to perhaps find a new creation in the midst of this, of something that is perhaps dying, and to rise up as a progressive Methodist voice for the world today.
What are you hearing today from members of your congregation?
Just last night, we had our church council meeting for the month, and there were a lot of perspectives that were expressed. But one of them, from a very faithful person that I've gotten to know very well over these last 6 years, was just, you know, I don't know that me and my family would be able to support a denomination that has this stance. And quite honestly, I think that we're all in that time of discernment, those of us who have a heart for truly being an open and inclusive church for all persons. It's also a day for reconciliation, repentance. I mean, to ask for forgiveness for those that we are wronging in this instance. It's a bad day.
And yet we know, as we just heard in talking to Pastor Joy Moore from Flint, that the feeling was this was the right thing to do for the church, although painful. So here's the question. Is there a place for both of these viewpoints in the one church?
That is the tension. That is exactly what we're living into today. I don't know the answer to that. I hope that there is, but I also know that in order to be a fully inclusive church, a fully inclusive local congregation, there may come a point at which we need to make some important decisions for us.
What kind of direction or guidance have you gotten from your bishop? Have you heard, have you been able to be in touch with your bishop since this?
Oh, yeah. Bishop David Bard is a wonderful person. He is able to live within this tension, knowing that it's coming from all different parts, and still maintain a less anxious presence in the center of it. And he was able to address through a Facebook Live conversation last night, you know, just a lot of this, like just a word of don't be non-anxious. That's not really accessible to us at this particular moment in time, but try to be less anxious and don't do anything too rash or too hasty, but just be with our people, you know, take some deep breaths, you know.
Is this an existential threat to the Methodist Church in the United States?
That is a wonderful question. As far as the Methodist movement will always be here, this movement that is so deeply rooted in Wesleyan theology and Arminian theology, it will always be a part of the United States. But in order to really own that progressive voice, I think that there will be room to start something new. That's my hope, or to be able to claim our identity within the larger whole while not sacrificing what is really important to us.
What does this debate within the second largest Christian denomination in this country, what does this mean to all of us in Michigan who are not members of the church but are watching this play out? What's the ripple effect throughout our state?
The message overall is that everyone is of sacred worth and value, and that there are movements that will attempt to marginalize folks. Those will not end up having the final say. There is still hope. There is still love, unconditional love. Love will win the day. Inclusion will win the day. Moving to that place. But fighting for civil rights, standing up for those who are marginalized and oppressed, is something that the Methodist Church has been doing for hundreds of years and will continue to do, even in this present moment, even if it means taking a different form or shape.
The Reverend Tim Ziegler, pastor of Westside United Methodist Church in Ann Arbor, thank you so much for being with us.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.